Thursday, March 11th, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour, and tonight we will present a discussion by your host, Pope Runyon, that's myself, on the Japanese martial arts system known as ninjutsu. Now, this may not seem related to the Western Hermetic tradition, but it seems that Hermetic magicians find it to be the most magical of the Oriental combat systems and are attracted to it. Ninjutsu combines techniques of armed and unarmed combat, along with other skills applicable to both paramilitary and magical operations. The ninja tradition is 800 years old, originating in feudal Japan. Ninjas were originally of the Japanese peasant class, defending themselves against the heavily armed and tyrannical samurai warriors. Now, some of these Oriental Robin Hood types evolved from patriots into professional assassins. So there is a dark side to ninjutsu. There is also a mystical, magical element in their yoga system called Kuji, which they claim to have received from Tibet via Chinese master teachers early in the feudal period. Now, this system involves an interlaced energy grid of 9 bands or cuts called Kujikiri. Now, we'll discuss ninja history, training methods, and philosophy. So, as we said in the abstract, tune in and we'll explore the spiritual side of mayhem. Now, tonight we're going to have Frater Abraxas, who is presently a member of Bujinkan Dojo, one of our members from Mississippi, and he's going to call in, and so we'll get a current take on what's going on. I have not been involved in the Bujinkan system for about 20 years now, so I think Abraxas can give us a current take on what's going on. I got into this, I had done some martial arts, and of course I was in Special Forces in the Army, so we had a little training there, but I got into karate and kung fu, not as much as I probably should have, but I was into it. And by the time I got to be about 55, back in 1992, I was way out of shape, and I was out of shape, and I was overweight, and I was feeling kind of miserable and depressed and all. And my lady friend at that time, she kind of was the same way, and we were both overweight and kind of miserable, and both about the same age. And so I said one night, look, what we ought to do is we ought to both take Tai Chi. I said, you know, I've been all busted up, and I got a bad shoulder, and I got a bad ankle, and one thing or another. And I said, you got problems with your joints, this, that, and the other. So let's take a soft martial art like Tai Chi. We can do that, and that'll get us back in shape. Well, she looked at me, and she said, let's be ninjas. And I said, oh, come on. You know, I knew a little bit about it. Not much, but I mean, at least I knew enough to know that it was pretty strenuous. And here we were, you know, over the hill and so she just really wanted us to be ninjas. And so I told her, I said, okay, I'll check it out, find out if there's a dojo around here, and we'll find out. So I did, and I checked up, and this was back in 92. And sure enough, I found a Bujinkan dojo. Now, let me explain right off about here, that Bujin Khan is the organization that was the first systemized ninjutsu, and it was school, and it was founded by Japanese martial arts master Masaki Hatsumi. And he's a chiropractor over in Japan, by the way, and in his 80s right now. But he founded this this school back in 77, 78. And a fellow by the name of Stephen Hayes became a student of his, brought it over to this country. And for quite a while, this Bujin Khan, which is the name of Dr. Hatsumi's, well, you might want to call it corporation or whatever. It's the official dojo system for ninjutsu. So I found one of these Bujin Khan dojos, and one of I believe he was one of Stephen Hayes' students, and so I got in there, and and the first night, and I talked to the sensei, and he's a young fella, and he. And I told him, I said, well, look, I said, I used to be in Special Forces way back when, and I've been done a little karate and a little kung fu, and I'm overweight, and I'm out of shape, and I got a couple of banged up injuries and whatever, but I'd like to try this. And he looked at me, I kind of smiled, and he said, are you sure you know what you're getting into? And I think I must have said something like John Wayne, you know, John Wayne type remark. Well, I may not be as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was, or some foolishness like that. And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, all right. He said, we'll let you try it and see how you like it. And, oh, boy. So the first night we did about 20 minutes of stretching exercises, all kinds of different stretching exercises, which are all designed to get you just as limber as possible. And then we started, and oh my God. And I'm almost 30 pounds overweight. One thing you got to know about this system, every pound overweight that you are makes it hurt more when you hit the floor. And most of the training is done on a hard floor in ninjutsu. Everything, by the way, is done half speed. These techniques are actually, if you did them full speed, you'd hurt people. You would send people to the hospital. So they're done half speed. And so you're not competing. There's no in ninjutsu, you don't compete. They don't have, okay, Abraxas, are you there? Hey, Kelly, are you there? You're being quiet like a ninja. Abraxas, talk to me. Don't just sneak up like that. All right. Well, anyway, I'll keep. Zandria tells me you're there, so say something, will you? All right, I'm going to keep talking until you finally break in. Just don't sneak up behind me like Dr. Hatsumi and drop a sword on my head. I got started in this thing, and what we did primarily to begin with is we take running starts, and we do this very, very minimal mats, but I mean they were a masterpiece for this. Here, running starts and then do somersaults, and we just dive into a somersault. And the idea was to come up standing in a fighting stance. And this we did this, and we must have done this over and over and over and over again. And then there were different variations of it where you roll to one side, roll to the other side. And if Abraxas will ever get on here, when we were down in Texas down at the Hermitage in Texas. He demonstrated one of these rolls, and it hurt to watch him do it. But I mean, I looked at it and I thought, my God, yes, I was doing that. But anyway, we did these rolls, and after we spent, okay, are you there? Yeah, you're there. All right. Now I'm just talking right now. I'm just kind of giving a little bit of my experience on getting started. But what I would you tell us what's going on in Mujinkan today? Because I haven't been, I haven't really been involved in 20 years, and so give us a rundown on what's happening today, if you would.
Well, it's actually still a very flourishing school. Here, particularly in the South, for some reason, I'm not sure, there's quite a few Bujinkan schools. And luckily, I was actually curious one day to see what kind of martial arts schools were around here. And I found kind of a somewhat local Bujinkan school, and just decided to give them a call and join up and start practicing with them. And they're very, very professional, very good at what they do. And, I enjoyed every minute practicing with them, whenever I could. I had to travel about 2 hours to go to the school because it's in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they have a really good school there. There were some small groups meeting here on the Mississippi State Starkville campus, but maybe that's something I can do, is get a group started up here. But
the one you're into, that's licensed by Dr. Hatsumi, right?
Right.
I want to mention that, Kelly. I want to mention that right now, before we get off on into the inner workings of this, that we mentioned Bujinkan. Bujinkan is Dr. Hatsumi's. It's like his corporation. It's like it's the school. But it's Togakuri Ryu Ninjutsu, and Ryu. Togakuri is the mountain where the system comes from, that area. And then Ryu means style in jazz. So Bujinkan is under Dr. Hatsumi's license, and it is what is referred to as Togakuri Ryu Ninjutsu. And the reason why I mentioned it, I want to make this clear, is wouldn't you agree this is the largest school in this country right now?
Oh yeah, definitely. For ninjutsu, it's by far the largest. Even just Japanese martial arts in general, it's a very, very big school. They teach, I think they teach a lot of the old ancient warrior arts of Japanese culture.
Yeah, we have about 15. I was just looking at the Googling Bujinkan today. We have about 15 of them right here in the Los Angeles area, all operating. This is very it's very popular with people who are serious about martial arts. And we have another call coming in. Who we got on here? What?
Who?
Hello.
This is Errol Pena from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Yeah. Are you you a member of a Bujinkan dojo?
Actually, I'm here in Corpus Christi, Texas. We have what's called the Heart of Bujinkan here in Texas, and we fly a lot of, I guess, Shihan or higher Danren martial artists from around the world here in Texas to do seminars and so forth and so forth. So I've had a lot of different interesting conversations with some of the Bujinkan individuals as far as its esoteric aspect. So it's just I was told to call in. Actually, Darcy Kuntz is a friend of mine, and I caught him on the last time he was on the show. So anyone just randomly told me.
We want to. What we want to do now, though, is because this is the Hermetic Hour, and of course our primary orientation is Western magic, and yet there seems to be that so many of us involved in Western magic, ninjutsu is our martial art of choice, and I think the reason for that is because it's the most magical of the the martial arts, and of course it's also kind of mysterious and romantic, and so we like it for that reason. But it has this ancient tradition behind it. But I think I want to mention, while we're talking about the beginning of this, Dr. Hatsumi, with the help of Stephen Hayes, got it started here in this country back around 1978. That's the Bujinkan school, which we all seem to be have been or are associated with. But Stephen Hayes, since then, he has, back in 92, I think he decided to do a more, his own version of a more modern concept of ninjutsu. Still with a spiritual aspect to it, I suppose. And I haven't really, I don't know too much about what he's doing now, but he calls it quest centers. And I would assume if Stephen Hayes is controlling it and the head of it, it would probably be pretty good. But my feeling is this, and I want to mention this before we go any further, that the only, you know, I think Stephen Hayes is a great teacher and all that, and we owe him a great debt, what have you. But Bujinkan is the only one that I could recommend, but I think people should also maybe look at what Stephen Hayes has. What do you think about that?
Poke, do you mind if I comment on that? I just wanted to make a comment about Stephen Hayes. Back before I actually found Western magic or, some other occult or yoga or anything like that, my goal was to actually, I wanted to study under Stephen Hayes directly and learn esoteric ninjutsu from him. And so I kind of researched him a little bit, and you know, I do agree with you that that following Hatsumi Sensei's route is the best. But one thing about Hayes that I would give him credit, especially how it relates to magic, is he was encouraged by Hatsumi Sensei to come up with kind of his own way of teaching ninjutsu. And one thing that he came up with was it was called Godai, and it's the five great elements. And so he bases his techniques off of earth, water, fire, wind, and the formless void. So I thought that was really relevant to our Hermetic tradition, and I thought correlation.
It is. It definitely is, and this is the reason why we're covering ninjutsu tonight. Besides the fact that we're, involved in it, we've been involved in it, and we like it, and so I guess we don't need an excuse, but really, it is. It's a very magical system, and we'll get into that aspect of it, but first, people should be aware of a few things first, and I want to make this very, very clear, that in ninjutsu, everything is done in training at half speed. And if it wasn't done half speed, these techniques are dangerous. And if we did this work full speed, we'd be sending people to the hospital. And so everything's done half speed, and so you're not competing against each other. You're all working together in the dojo, and you have a number of different weapons that you use. Once you, I would say, from my experience, and I got it, I was with it for a little over a year, got a green belt, but my experience was that about 65% of it is pretty close to Japanese kendo jujitsu. Now, would you both agree with that?
Yeah, I would say taijutsu, what they're teaching is, they have a lot of wrist locks and throws and things like that. And so in that respect, yeah, it is similar to jujitsu.
Yeah. And then the rest of it is special weapons training and the ninja sword, by the way, the ninjutsu is made the same way as a katana, but it has a straight blade and it's shorter. I remember we did a lot of work with a bow. We had a whole bunch of practice weapons in the rack, but we mainly concentrated on the bow and the staff. It's a half a bow, and I forget what you call it, but we got good at that. And then I remembered we had a tea ceremony one time where we practiced how to murder people in a tea ceremony, and that was a lot of fun. Fortunately, nobody got murdered. But then we used to put on demonstrations downtown on at Japanese events, and because I was the oldest guy in the dojo, I used to I played the old peasant, bent over. And the samurai come out and try to attack me, and then I use my cane to trip them and what have you. So that was my part, probably the easiest part in the demonstration, though. Let's move to the magical part of this. And the magical part, but I guess I have to say this that you really at green belt level, you don't get that much into Kuji. I don't have any personal experience with Kuji. I discussed it with my sensei, and we talked about it. I looked at it and what we can find on it. And I said, I thought this has as much Taoism in it as it has Tantra. Now, Stephen Hayes, and I guess Dr. Hatsumi goes along with this, says that it comes originally from Tibet through these Chinese refugees that came over to feudal Japan and started that. But, we're mentioning the five elements. Yeah, this is Taoism. And I think, what do you think? Kuji and Kuji Kuri seem to have a lot of Taoist aspects to them, don't they?
Right. Actually, I was reading earlier in a book called Religion in Japan, Arrows to Heaven and Earth by P.F. Kornicki and J. McMullen. And in their book, they do talk about the techniques came from either, from Korea, from China, and also a part of Taoist folklore and Taoist-influenced martial arts. So I think multiple sources, are saying that. So, I could understand that.
Well, I'm glad you agree with me on that, because I'm looking. I did 8 different Tibetan systems that I've been initiated into, and I don't. In all of those, every one of them, visualization comes first. Energy follows visualization, and I don't think in Taoist yoga is the other way around. Energy comes first, and then later you might get visualization. And it looks to me like, I don't know, because I'm not initiated high enough to really, to be in the upper end of ninjutsu is called Ninpo. And I'm not a Ninpo practitioner, so I'm just talking about what I've read and what I've discussed. But it looks to me like Kuji Curry is primarily a yoga of energy, which would make it more Taoist than tantric.
Right.
Let's have some comments on that.
Polk, have you studied much about Mikyo?
About what?
In your Mikyo, it's like the seems to be the esoteric Buddhism. I didn't know if Tibetan Buddhism was if that's what that was or if they taught that. Because it's saying that that this esoteric Buddhism called Mikyo, M-I-K-K-Y-O.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's Japanese, and that is always associated with Ninpo. Ninpo, in fact, when I think Dr. Hatsumi joined this Mikyo cult, and they claim to be tantric, and they're Buddhists, and they're in Japan, and he's got his version of Kuji is related to the Mikyo religion or Nishitori yoga system or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I know nothing about it except what I've just read in the books. And Dr. Hatsumi, I might mention right now, people want to get some books on this. Dr. Hatsumi has written one called Ninjutsu, History and Tradition, and that's, I think, still available. And one of Stephen Hayes's students, Kirkland Peterson, Kirkland C. Peterson, written a book called Mind of the Ninja. Now, this guy is a psychologist, got a PhD in psychology, and he's kind of Jungian, so I really warm up to his book here. The Mind of the Ninja is the psychology primarily from looking at it from a psychological point of view, the whole system. Are you familiar with that book?
No, I'm not, Polk, actually. I'm familiar with Ninjutsu History and Tradition, though.
Yeah.
There's also a really good book by Hatsumi Sensei. I think it's called The Grandmaster's. Let me get the exact title real quick, and I'll get back to you. He's only written a couple of books. I've tried to find more literature from Hatsumi Sensei, and this book that I'm trying to find. It's called The Grandmaster's Book of Ninja Training, and it's basically one long interview with Hatsumi Sensei, and he talks more about his Buddhist philosophy, or his Mikyo philosophy, his Ninpo philosophy. He gets really deep into his personal views on his esoteric personal beliefs, I guess you could say.
Well, that's what I have to read. I want to read that one. Now, what's the title again?
It's called The Grandmaster's Book of Ninja Training.
Yeah. Yes, that's
really good.
Yeah, definitely. Let's look at that one. A couple of things that I want to mention, though, about in case people are wondering why, what this magical system of theirs is used for, and why they have developed it. The ninjas are primarily they're what they call shadow warriors. There's a lot of stealth involved in ninjutsu, a lot of what we would call in paramilitary operations we call escape and invasion, infiltration. Long range patrolling, this kind of stuff. There's a lot, but it's all in the Bujinkan system. It's taught in the old fashioned way. I mean, it's not Bujinkan is not a is not a school for special forces operators, although I'm sure there are a lot of special forces operators that are into it. But it's the old fashioned. It's the old fashioned. A lot of those techniques though are still applicable. A lot of stealth involved in it, and one of the ninjas were famous or infamous for their ability to be. To sneak into castles. Those old Japanese castles were dark and big and dark. And the ninjas would sneak in. And sometimes they would sneak in through the what we would call the plumbing. In other words, they'd crawl up through the toilet, you know, and get into the castle. And then they would get themselves and find themselves a spot up in the rafters if they could find it, or down in a dark corner. And then they would get in there, and they would just curl themselves up in a ball, and shut their metabolism down, and control their breathing, and calm their minds, and be absolutely motionless for hours, sitting there in a corner, all black. So you could walk right by them, and you wouldn't even know they were there unless you were looking for them. And even if you were looking for them, you might not know they were there because you couldn't sense them. They're there. They're just inert. But that ninja has to be able to, from that state, he has to be able to leap up fully capable of all of his faculties. He's got to be able to leap up, draw his sword and kill his target or do what he's going to do, and then he's got to get out of there, climb up the rafters and jump off the roof and do all various things to get out. Now, in order to do that, you have to have tremendous control over your body, and you have to have because you can just imagine. I mean, I think we can all imagine just how difficult it is to curl yourself up in a little ball in the corner and stay there without moving a muscle for 3 or 4 hours. If anybody, without training, without intensive training, you'd have to jump up after all that and oh, good Lord. I mean, this is one of the reason, one of the things that they use that kuchikuri for is to give them that, to keep that energy flowing, to keep the body simple, to be ready, and yet at the same time not radiate any indication of their consciousness, because we all know, even in the military, we know that if you're lying in ambush, You better not be thinking a whole bunch of angry thoughts, because if you are, the enemy's going to pick up on it. And they have various mudras and these cuts for this grid, this nine band grid, that interlaced grid that forms the kuchikuri grid, and they can use these mudras and these cuts to give them the energy to do these fantastic things that they have to do. Now, does that sound? What do you guys want to comment? You want to comment on that?
Sure, Polk. I mean, everything you're saying is accurate to me, especially about the killer intention thing. That seems to be a very important point in ninjutsu. And actually, I think in order to pass your final test, I guess you could say, you sit there, and from behind, the master will come and attack you randomly without you knowing. You're not able to see or hear them at all, and you have to feel them, and they'll come down with this sword, and if you're not able to harness this kind of psychic ability, then you'll get cut and you'll fail, you know, and you'll have more training to do after that. But apparently, if you're able to roll out of the way, then you've harnessed this Kuji power. And actually, I have a little article that I wanted to read to you. It's not long at all. It's just a little story from Stephen Hayes.
He
relates something that happened to him. It's in this book, Religion in Japan. This is a little quote from that book. It says, Hayes relates that while he was training in Japan, he frequently asked Dr. Hatsumi for guidance concerning the Kuji. In the end, he returned to the United States with his curiosity unsatisfied. But in 1982, when Dr. Hatsumi was visiting him for a ninja gathering in Ohio, the question came up again in discussion. Hayes has recently recalled what happened. Once and for all, to satisfy my need for knowledge, in front of everybody, Hatsumi Sensei suddenly turned to me and ordered me to punch him in the back of the head from behind whenever I was ready. Perhaps he noticed the look of horror on my face. He laughed and said he would take all responsibility for whatever happened. Again, he stated his order to punch him without warning. With that, he turned his back to me and casually waited for my strike, continuing to talk to the crowd. I punched at the back of his head. Without any preparation or setup whatsoever, he slipped to the side as my fist sailed through the air to where his head had been a fraction of a second before. There is no way he could have seen or heard the punch coming. Sensei then scanned the shocked crowd with his gaze and announced flatly, "That is Kuji."
Yeah.
So,
yes. Kirtland Peterson recounts that one in his book Mind of the Ninja, and that story is. And I have a friend out here who is a sensei out here who was under over in Japan under Dr. Hatsumi's sword, and I think he got cut the first time. It's the power of the mind. So a lot of this had influence on George Lucas with his Jedi, because the Jedi derive from two sources: one, the ninja, and two, an old science fiction series called the Lensman series by Doc Smith. But you combine the two, the ninja and the Lensman, and you got the Jedi. In fact, interestingly enough, the people at PSYOPs, they were calling themselves Jedi for a while. But so much of what we see in the Star Wars movies with the Jedi are really ninja techniques, and including the mind trick, because the mind trick is. I want to mention this in context with magic now. There are similarities, in Western magic and ninja training, but there's something. There is one big difference, and that difference needs to be really emphasized here. The ninja does not disappear inside himself. He's not trying to escape into his own reality. He has to extend his consciousness and his perception to the reality he is in. And he should be not just alert, but he has to be supernaturally alert to his surroundings and to the people he interacts with. This is the opposite of Western magic and tantric magic. This is the opposite, because in Western magic we're creating this personal reality which we are then trying to reflect upon shared reality. But the ninja, he has to be aware of everything around him and everybody around him, and he should be able to look at a person and judge their threat level immediately. Just casually, just look at a person. And I'm looking at Zandria right now, and she doesn't look threatening at all. but I'm just agreeing about what do I know? But anyway, this is a point that this is a different kind of this is a different kind of yoga. This is a yoga of survival. And the ninja is first, last, and always a survivor. And you guys want to comment on that?
Yeah, Poke. I completely agree with you on that. There's actually another little excerpt from this book that I wanted to mention. It says, these are Dr. Hatsumi's words. He says, "Therefore I say that the ku in kuro, or hardship in Japanese, will lead to kuji. The ku character of kuro means suffering. That suffering will produce the strength that empowers your kuji. By forging on through hardship, you come to know the overwhelming quality of willpower that enables your intentions to become reality. Of course, you realize that what we are talking about here is different from ordinary kuji. After you have endured all the hardships, you will transcend this kuji and go on to a more elevated realization." So it sounds very similar to magic. Another quote he has says, "The hand postures and grid cutting are in actuality only one-third of the whole kuji concept. They represent the role of the physical body in action, which must be joined by the intellect in action and the will in action in order to produce results. The three elements of thought..." The three elements of thought, word, and deed, coordinated and attuned with each other, make up the ninja's kuji power principle. The system is in reality a method for learning to remove the gap that separates intention from successful action. Once the kuji technique is mastered, the ninja then has the power to create physical reality by means of his intention alone. Focused intention becomes completed action itself. Cause blends with effect until the distinction fades. I thought that was a really interesting quote.
Yeah, that's
quote.
Excellent. I'm gonna share with you one of my experiences. My most memorable experience with kuji power. Yeah, if it was kuji power, I'm not sure it was, but it certainly was power. One time in the dojo, we were practicing kicking, and we were practicing this mule kick, and this is not a. Now, by the way, I mentioned that in ninjutsu, you have to, if you've had a lot of karate. You're going to have to unlearn a lot of things that you learn in karate. One thing you're going to have to unlearn is kicking. In karate, you go up on your tippy toe to do a sort of a ballet pirouette and kick sideways. And, well, it's good. There's a lot of power involved in that. And, oh, yeah, it works good. But the problem is that you telegraph it. So in ninjutsu, you kick straight. And because there's no telegraphing kicking straight, so a lot of times you got to relearn things that you've learned in kung fu and karate. But the one that I want to recount, I was wearing an uki, body armor, and we had this little fellow. He was a Filipino, and he weighed about 98 pounds soaking wet. But just all wiry, just all, with cord muscle. And he squatted down in front of me on the mat, and he squatted down, and then he jumped. He left the ground, and he went up, all the way up to the level of my chest, And then apparently he, it was all happened so fast, but he arched his back as he was going up, which put him in a position where he could mule kick me with both feet in the right in the solar plexus. And I had this spooky armor on, fortunately, or I'd have died. And he literally knocked me all the way across the dojo. I hit the weapons rack, knocked all the bows and the halberds and everything, you know, went flying all over the place. And here I am sitting on the floor with my back against the wall, out of breath. And here's this little guy, and I'm sitting there, and I said, "How did you do that?" And he looked at me, and he said, "I draw power from the earth."
Oh, wow.
I'm sitting there, "Oh, yeah, you do, all right." Yeah, that was, boy, I'll never forget that. So I'm wondering, was, you know, because we got all kinds of people from other martial arts systems and all that, that have different ways of doing things. I'm wondering if that was part of Kuji. Now, he wasn't a black belt. This guy was a green belt. But I wonder.
Well, it definitely sounds like he knew something, you know, whether it was self-study or you know, I'm not sure. But I feel like these, you know, the way, to me, the way that ninjutsu combines magic and fighting together is just really fascinating. And I say, you know, why not? It seems really reasonable. You know, I mean, especially when it comes to being able to sense your opponent's moves and being able to draw energy from the earth. There, you know, there's a lot of fiction about, you know, like video game characters or cartoon characters that can shoot these powerful energies out of their hands, and
yeah.
Like Dragon Ball Z and stuff like that, and Street Fighter, but I think that those, you know, in a subtle way, there is some truth to that. Maybe not quite that blatant, you know, but I
yeah,
think, you know,
yeah.
It goes back to the concept of qi and qi in Chinese martial arts. There's a lot of it's interesting how they draw their power. From their spirituality, you know, from their magic and everything.
Absolutely. And this particular thing, I'll never forget that. It took me about 10 minutes to really get my breath back after that one. But the essence of this training is to perfect powers, to give you, enable you to do things you never thought you could do. And I know I never could imagine that at the age that I was, with all the, you know, aches and pains and everything, and overweight and all, had to take a running start and dive over a table and then end up and land on your feet, just somersault in midair and land on your feet. I never imagined that in 100 years I could do something like that. But sure enough, I did it. And you never could do it, by the way. And this is one thing I want to mention right now, because I know we've probably got some people out there listening that, oh boy, they're going to look up a dojo and they're going to get started, because it's like, you know, Americans love superheroes, and we especially love Batman. And of course, the new Batman series, you know, Batman's a ninja. And, yeah, that's where he learned all this stuff. Okay, well, sure, he is a ninja. And so, you know, you want to be a superhero, well, this is the best way you can be. But I want to point something out before we get people too excited about this. Number one, you have to, if you're going to do this work, you have to have those about 15 to 20 minutes of warm-up and special stretching exercises, which and not just any stretching exercises. They have Ninjutsu, Bujinkan has a set of special exercises, and you will take 15 minutes every time you go into the dojo. You don't just go in cold and start doing this stuff. If you did, you would, like you say, and people would be going to the hospital. So this is not something you could do by yourself, and it is not something you can do with somebody who is not a qualified instructor. I mean, it's just, you have to have a qualified instructor, and of course, the only one that we can recommend is Bujinkan. There are probably others that are good, but I mean, that's the one that we recommend. But I noticed in researching this just for this show, somebody's offering a home study course with videos. That's where you can teach yourself to be a ninja all the way to black belt at home. Can you imagine anything? My God. I mean, I can't imagine this.
I'd like to talk. Can I be heard?
What?
I'd like, you mentioned the home study course?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually a lot of, especially in the martial arts, and I've been involved in the Bujinkan for about 8 years. A lot of stuff going on with individuals that you know, try to take the shortcut and do the videos and at home, and it's almost kind of like in some of the other organizations that we're familiar with, in Freemasonry and some of the other esoteric organizations, where they're trying to find a shortcut, and they want the title, and you know, we see that. I've been to seminars all over the place, and we see that sometimes just for you know, just like politics and anything else, you'll see people, you know, that have been passed, you know, from green belts, you know, from the ninth Q all the way to their Shodan, which is your black belt, you know, almost overnight.
Yeah.
And that's very common. I mean, you know, that's very common in the esoteric world and, you know, in the Rosicrucianism and so forth. You know, it's kind of like one of those sayings where, you know, initiation isn't given; it's attained. You know, it's something that you work to. It's an ever-going process, and it's the same thing of martial arts. And as long as I've been studying and training in the Bujinkan, we've flown people from Spain, from all over the world to come and train with us. Ed Martin, we call him Papa Song; he's one of the big ones here in the U.S. And Jack Roman.
Yeah, he's good.
And I've asked some of them about some of these esoteric subjects, and I've always gotten the same answer, is that Masaki Hatsumi does not teach some of these esoteric things. Now they've told me stories about, you know, times where they've literally seen Masaki Hatsumi put a baby to sleep just by waving his hand, which I don't doubt. You know, but some of these things that a lot of people try to study, I know there's some books out there. I don't remember the author's name, and I won't mention it, but they mention some of these powers that can be gained and so forth. There's just like in anything else, there's a lot of stuff that's just a lot of misinformation within the Bujinkan. It's unfortunate, but that's just reality. You know, it happens. You know, and we, you know, and the very first part of the Bujinkan, it's when you're studying to get your black belt test, you're studying the Tenchi Jin, heaven, earth, and so forth. And you know, you have your, what you call your Sanshin, and you have your basic forms, and some of the basic forms are earth, fire, water, you know, wind, and void, which was kind of already mentioned. But a lot of people get the idea that, you know, when you're doing these things, you are fire or you are water. And from what I've been told, some of that, you know, is kind of maybe a mistranslation from somewhere that's come from Japan to here. You know, and as far as studying the, and maybe it's, you know, maybe misinformation on my part. I know there is a lot of individuals in Japan that are, you know, involved in the OTO or involved some other esoteric organizations, because a lot of, you know, Western mystics and so forth are very drawn towards the Bujinkan, and there's a lot of stuff in there. But as far as I've been searching, you know, I actually was just chatting with someone that's the longest living American in Japan, and you know, he's mentioned to me multiple times that, you know, Masaki Hatsumi doesn't teach any of this stuff. I think the last
I think there was only about four individuals that the Takamatsu, which was Masaki Atsumi's instructor, really kind of went over any of the very esoteric, very in-depth esoteric work. That's as far as I've gone, and I've been trying to find out too because it's very interesting. I've always thought there's a lot more there than meets the eye. And one of the things that I've noticed before is we do intent training. We actually have a few people going to Japan real soon, and there's the Godan test, and it's all, I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with it. You're on your knees, you're in your position, and a person comes at you at your head with a boken. But the attacker actually has to send a true intent as if they're going to attack you, and you're supposed to be receptive as to feeling that intent, knowing that something's coming from behind you, and you move out of the way. And that's something that's gained over time. We actually train it. One of the very interesting things that we actually done in our school is we call it the intent test. It's we take, the uke tori. The uke is the person that, is the person that's being attacked, and the tori is the attacker. But you stand across the room, and both people walk towards each other, and you don't know if the person's going to either A, or shake your hand, or one, punch you. And you have to really get a feel for when they get that close, just knowing and feeling that they're the intent is there. And there's some of those things that can be trained.
Some of that, of course, is knowing body language and expressions, and you have to. This is the idea of being completely aware of your surroundings and everybody you confront, everybody that you have to deal with. You have to make instant judgments, and you have to be right. And this requires a lot of training and a lot of practice. We're about to run out of time, but gosh, I sure appreciate you coming on board, and we probably have generated a few recruits here for the various Bujinkan dojos, at least I hope we have. And I think we've also, and we have, it's 90 seconds left. All right, continuing along with our Oriental kind of theme here, next week, Pajra Yogini, the goddess of the sorcerers. That is a mid-level tantra, which I managed to complete, and for in about a year. And so we will discuss Pajra Yogini next week. And until then, good magic.